We're holding on to Ches Amud Beis, 12 lines from the bottom, line hands of Zeta. Turn it up on. Ein mechassin ela ba'ofer divrei Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai says you can only do kisei adam with dust, which means that Beis Shammai would disagree with the various details we mentioned yesterday about being able to use sawdust or ground up, or maybe ground up stones. They'd agree because that's basically dust, but fine, but not, for example, lime and fine dung and so forth. Beis Shammai would disagree and say, and also ashes. Beis Shammai would disagree with all of those and say you have to use offer, dust, or basil. I mean, no, Matsino Efer Shakori offer. No, you can also use ashes, for example, because we find that ashes in the Pasuk are called offer. Shenema v'loch kula tami me'afar sreifas v'zema, because you have by the paradroma, the Pasuk says they should take from the dust of the burning of the burnt paradroma and put it in water and sprinkle it on the tamei person. And obviously it's not dust, it's ashes. So we see that the word offer can also mean ashes.
So it could be mixed with ashes.
No, but it's not. Right? It is ashes, practically speaking. If you mix anything else with it, it's no good. Or but if you mix even other ashes with it, it's no good. Or with Shammai, the Shammai would answer to that, Afar Srefa Ikri offer Samala Ikri. Fine, you can say that ashes are called Afar Srefa, dust for burning. Not necessarily are they called just plain dust, and here it just doesn't say you should cover the blood with afar. Here it doesn't say you should cover with afar straight, but it just says with offer. So therefore, Beis Shammai sticks to their guns that you have to use offer. Okay. Tana, we learn in a verse.
They don't say afar straight. Though.
They say red. Right, the pasuk only says offer. So yeah. Okay. Tana. So therefore, obviously the halacha is like the till as it usually is, and therefore, so you do now you do actually have some of the mepharshim learn that not necessarily, first of all, actually, Tosfos discusses, in Beisa, you have Beis Shammai apparently agreeing that you can use ashes for Kisei Adam. So Tosfos discusses there may be a difference where the ashes came from. Certain kinds of things that are burned are megadol smokim, they grow plants, and others not. That's one answer. Anyway, this that we said, though, that you can use anything in which plants will grow, obviously that's according to Beis Hillel. Tana, we learn in a braisa, hoisifu aleh, and besides for all the substances that we mentioned before that we can use, you had a list in the Mishnah, and then you had a longer list in the braisa. For example, we have combings from flax that were mentioned in the braisa, and soda, and fine sawdust, and so on and so forth. So hoisifu aleh, and the Chachamim added, the thoris was sawdust. Hoisifu aleh, and the Chachamim also added, here is other things that you can use for kisei adam, hashachar, soot, like from ground up charcoal, that coil, and eyeshadow powder. It was a bluish powder that they used for eyeshadow. The nikras psulin, and what you get by carving out, or no, not really carving out, by cleaning out psulin. So Rashi explains, like this, you have millstones, after a while they get dusty and dirty, so every so often you have to clean them out, you have to rub them, you have to whatever you do, you poke them and whatever, and you get out all the dust that's gotten into the crevices of them, and so you can use that. Tosfos says that not necessarily, I mean, we mentioned already before Shechikas Avonim, we mentioned ground up stones, so here evidently it must be something else, and you have Rishonim talk about, I think the Ritva says that nikras psulin can mean, for example, you have, let's say, wooden idols, even, like we're going to talk later about using things above a desert. Hold on, but if you have that part of them is rotting away, and therefore psulin, meloshim pesel, then you can use that rotted away material from it for kisei adam. We'll see later. The Gemara is going to discuss later about using ashes of avodah zarah for the purpose. But yeah. Okay. Okay, so now a little agadah on the subject. Amar Rabba, v'schar sh'amar Avram avinu v'anochi offer v'efer, and the schus of Avram saying on himself, in a tefillah for Sodom, I am dust and ashes, zochu bonav l'shtei mitzvahs, efer para v'afar socha. For that, his descendants were zocha to two mitzvahs, for efer, there's efer para, the ashes of the para adroma, v'afar socha, and for offer, there's the dust that's used as part of the socha ceremony, where dust is put into the water that she drinks. Now, what's the point? Where does David say that he's offer? David says later on, he says, we're going to describe that soon. Fine, but David is not the descendant, is not the ancestor of the whole Jewish people. Avraham is. So Avraham's saying, Va'anechi offer v'efer, got these mitzvahs for his descendants. So Marsha says, the vort is not that without Avraham saying that, we wouldn't have those mitzvahs. The vort is that without those, without Avraham saying that, it might have been, for example, yeah, a person can become tahor after being tomimess. But you couldn't just use plain, you couldn't just use ashes for it from a par adruma. You'd have to use some kind of rare, hard to get material or whatever. And the same thing with the soita, she would just be also to her husband forever. This that you're able to be master her to her husband, and this that the tmeim are able to become tahor relatively easily, is a result of the schus of Avraham by saying v'anochi ofer b'aseh. So the question, again, otherwise Hashem would have said that you need some more difficult substance to get to be tahor from Tumas Nes. And as far as the soita, maybe even she can't be tahor to her husband at all. Once she's under suspicion, then that's it. It's a done deal. So the question is, v'lech shavnami achar kisi adam, why are we not mentioning in that connection also the dirt, that's the dust that's used for kisi adam? The answer is, hosem hechsha mitzvah ikka hanol leka. Because, yeah, dust is a prerequisite for the mitzvah. And it's true, but on the other hand, there's no hanal in it. Meaning Rashi says, and if you didn't do kisi adam, you'd still be allowed to eat the meat. You do actually have some of the mechorishim learn that maybe once the mitzvah was given, then you can't taka. Maybe once the mitzvah is given, then you taka have to cover the blood before you eat the meat. But we're saying if the mitzvah hadn't been given, if it hadn't been for Avraham saying, run it off of Afer, you wouldn't daft have to cover the blood in order to eat the meat. As opposed to Afer para, you have the hanal, you're able to become tahor. You know, no afer, no ashes, you're not able to become tahor. The same thing with the soita. There you have the benefit from it, that you have shalom between the husband and wife, and that if she's innocent of the charges, then she'll have children more easily, etc. So those are all hanois, as opposed to you don't really get a hanoi from kisi adam. There is a sikha in Chelek Chalpeh where the Rebbe talks about the deeper idea why Avraham said monoshi off of afer gets dafka these two mitzvahs. And the idea that Rebbe discusses over there is Avraham's midah was chesed, and chesed includes that you set yourself and you set your own agenda aside in favor of the other person, in favor of what the other person needs, which is also what he's doing over here when he's davening at chesedim, even though they're his polar opposites. So therefore, the reward for that is that you have Efer Para, where the Kohen does the same kind of thing. The Kohen and everybody who's involved in preparing the Para Adroma is willing for themselves to become Tomei in order to be Matahar a fellow Yid. And with Afar Sota, the same thing, that Hashem, so to speak, puts himself aside and says, I'm willing to have my name be erased in order to make Shalom Ben Yishlishto. So those two things evoke the Chesed and the Schos of Avraham Avinu. The Omar Rava, also Rava says another thing, in speaking of Schosim that Avraham got for his descendants as a result of things that he said, as a reward for Avraham saying, after the war with Sodom, not the war with Sodom, whatever, the war of the four kings against Sodom, after Avraham gets involved and defeats the four kings and then brings back all the captives and all the booty from Sodom. So Melech Sodom offers him all the possessions. He says, I want the people back, but you can keep all the possessions. And Avraham tells him, absolutely not. I won't even take anything from a thread to a shoelace. Therefore, Zachobon of Lashkei Mitzvot. Therefore, his children, as a result of that, was Zachot the two mitzvot. Lachot shal tchelas or ratzur shal tfilin. The blue string of tchelas in tittis and the straps of tfilin. Again, Marsha says, in other words, the point is, the mitzvot would have existed without that also. But like this, for example, tittis didn't necessarily have to involve tchelas. The fact that it does is a result of Avraham saying Michut. And same thing, tefillin didn't necessarily have to be tied on with straps. You might just have to hold them in place. You might have to put them on with threads or whatever. This thing, you have straps for the purpose, is a result of Avraham saying Tzroich Na, which means the shoelace. Because he didn't want to enjoy Gezel, exactly. I mean, it wasn't strictly speaking Gezel. Strictly speaking, it technically belonged to him because it was all taken captive. It was all returned. It was all brought back. It means, in other words, that Avraham considered it Gezel and therefore wanted nothing to do with it. So Avraham held himself to a higher standard, and he didn't want to have Hana from this stuff that doesn't belong to him. Okay. So this question is, Bishlemer Ratzua Shal Tfilin. I understand what the benefit is that we get from having the straps of Tfilin for the Shal Rosh, because the Pasuk says that all of the nations of the world will see that the name of Hashem is called upon you. V'tanya, and we learn in a brayter, Rabbi Elazar Gadol Omer Elut Tefillin Shabarosh. This refers to the tefillin on the head. So therefore, they show that Hashem's name is on us, and therefore it makes the nations of the world respect us and fear us. So therefore, there's an advantage to having the straps of the tefillin Shabarosh to keep it in place. Fine. So once you have one of them is tied on the straps, the other one is also. But primarily, we're talking about the source of the tefillin Shabarosh. El Achot Shal Tchelas Ma'idi. What's the great advantage of having tchelas in Tzitzis? Selectus Titania, Rab Meirim, Manishtan, we learned this in Menachos, Manishtan is Chelet, Mikolat Sivonin. Why is Chelet unique among all the colors? Why is Chelet Davka the one that the Torah insists be used for Sittis? Mipnei Shetchelet Doma L'yam, the reason is because the Chelet resembles the color of the sea, which Rashi says, the reason is because it comes from the Chelazim, which lives in the sea. The Yam Doma L'Rakia, in turn, the sea resembles the sky in color. V'Rakia Doma L'Evan Sapphire, the sky resembles sapphire, which is sapphire. The Evan Sapphire Doma L'Kisei HaKavod, that in turn resembles the Kisei HaKavod. And we know that there's a connection between the Kisei HaKavod and sapphire, because you have a pasuk by Yiras Elokei Yisrael, that when Moshe goes up onto Har Sinai right before Matan Torah, and Aaron and the Skenim and so forth also go, it says they saw Hashem, they saw a vision of Elokus, the Sachas Raglav Gomer, and it said under his feet, so to speak, is Kemate Livnas HaSapphire, like a work of brick made out of sapphire. So we see that the Kisei HaKavod is described as sapphire. Uchtim, you also have a pasuk in Yechezkel, and Yechezkel's vision of the Merkava that he sees, Kemare Evan Sater Dmus Kisei, the semblance of something that looks like sapphire, the semblance of a throne on which Hashem sits, Chavyachol. So therefore, so we see that Hashem's throne is like sapphire.
Kamare
Evan Sapphire, like the appearance of sapphire. Dumus Kisei, the image, the appearance of a throne. So we see...
Why sapphire?
Why sapphire? I don't know.
Sapphire is not as brilliant, as shiny as a diamond.
Okay, but that's what it's compared to, is sapphire. Mind you, yeah. Yes, the color... Yeah,
blue isn't blue or purple like the heart, like the one of the hardest colors to find in nature.
No, could be that has to do with it. Yeah, no, sapphire we have in nature, but it's true. In general, you don't find very much blue color in nature. It could be it's because of that. It could be. I don't know. The truth of the matter is it's not so absolutely certain that sapphire is blue, by the way. You do have, at least when it comes to the description of the Kisei HaKavod, which is described as sapphire, you have other Mephoshim who explain that it was other colors, but whatever. For the purposes of our Gemara, we're saying it's blue. Anyway, so the point is, so therefore, so what's the hana of that? So how does that give you a benefit when you wear Chelet and Tzitzis? So Rashi says, when Hashem looks at his Kisei HaKavod, then, so to speak, he remembers this mitzvah, which is equivalent to all the other mitzvahs, and therefore it makes us much greater in Hashem's eyes. So that's tzitzis. So that's the hana that you get from wearing tzitzis and tzitzis.
So what we say, I don't understand. Tzitzis is like all the other mitzvahs, and yet we say, Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam.
Okay, there's different ways. And so there's different ways in which different mitzvahs are Keneged Kulam, each one in its own way.
So what is it?
Each one in its own way. Let's go on with the Gemara over here. We can discuss that afterwards. That's a side issue. But yeah, the point is that the tzitzis is, to a certain in a certain way, to neged kol mitzvahs, because it reminds you of all the other mitzvahs for one thing. Okay. Amar Rababa, speaking of this pasuk that Avraham says in Michut Vad Srichnal, so what ends up happening over there? So Avraham says, I'm not going to take a single thing from Sodom. However, then Avraham continues, Dil Odai, it's outside of me. In other words, I'm having nothing to do with it. But then he continues, Rak Asher Ochlo An Orim, and except for what the young men ate, meaning his helpers, Onur Eshkol Mamre, and the other people who were fighting with him. So, it's very harsh, the case where a person steals something and then eats it. Now again, Avraham didn't actually steal anything over here, but since Avraham is considering it like gezel, then we see from this pasuk that when it's eaten, it's a very hard thing. Even a perfect tzaddik like Avraham is not able to return it at that point. In other words, you should realize that when a person is gezel v'oichel, somebody steals and eats, it's very difficult afterwards to do tshuva for it. And Avraham says, Shenema bil odai, it's outside of me. In other words, I'll have nothing to do with it. Rak asher ochlo an orim, except for what the boys ate. In other words, once, like he's saying, so to speak, once they ate it, then too late, I can't return it. So therefore, so we see how bad that situation is, and therefore a person has to be careful to avoid that. Right, so that's the point. In other words, that we're saying that to eat or otherwise consume something that's stolen is a very bad thing. Speaking of, we said Avraham said on himself, "Lanochi ofer ve'efer." So let's talk a little bit more about this concept of Avraham's humility and the humility of other great figures in Jewish history. Amar Rabbi Yechon and Meshum Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shem. Kol makom shata moitzid dvarav shel Rabbi Elazar b'nai shel Rabbi Yitzchak Lili b'Hagada. Whenever you find words of Rabbi Elazar, the son of Rabbi Yitzchak Lili, regarding Agada, asay of necha ka'afar keses, make your ears like a funnel. In other words, open your ear, make sure you pay close attention, because what he's going to teach you is a very important concept. Namely, you have a pasuk in at the end of Parashas Vayeshanan that goes like this. It's not because of Rubchem from all the other nations. Rubchem literally means that you're larger. So it's not because you're larger than other nations that Hashem desires you, but in fact, you're the least among all the nations. Now, the point is that on the surface, the surface meaning of the pasuk is just Hashem is not looking out, doesn't consider the most numerous nation to be the most precious one, but rather you Jewish people are the least numerous nation, but Hashem loves you. But the point is that the Rebbe really is dashing it a little differently, because why should the number of people matter? So he explains, Amalem HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Yisrael, means Hashem is telling the Jewish people, Cheshkani Bachem, I love you, I desire you, because you have the great advantage, even when I bestow upon you greatness, you humble yourselves, you make yourselves little before me. You're humble about it.
We know it many times happen when that was not the case. How can we say that?
We're going to see examples of it. We're going to see examples from Jewish history where the Jewish people, where obviously we're talking about tzaddikim among the Jewish people, but once they do it, then it gives an esinat koyach to the rest of it to do all, so that they become greater and they are more humble about it. The Alter Rebbe writes in the Geras days, in the Geras HaKodesh, that's how it is in Kedusha, because when you're given great chesed by Hashem, it means Hashem is bringing you closer, and the closer a person is to Elikus, the more humble he should feel, realizing how small he is relative to Elikus.
Hashem on earth, in sense, is an example that he didn't. Hashem gave him...
He did certain averus because he thought they didn't apply to him or whatever. He wasn't proud, as in the examples that we're going to see soon from various Goyish kings or whatever, where he thinks that I don't need Hashem. So listen. Nasati Gdula Avraham. So Hashem says, I gave greatness to Avraham. He defeated the four kings. He had the huge success. Everybody calling him the seal of the king, etc. Or what did he say? Amal afon evon nirshi of Avraham. What did he say before Hashem? I'm dust and ashes. Because he said it was in the context was in his tefillah for Sedayim, but the point is that Avraham felt that way. In another place in Tanya, also in the Geras HaKodesh, Tetzvav, the Alter Rebbe talks about the idea that, again, Avraham personified Midas HaChesed, but Avraham, by saying Vanochi Ofer Va'efer, was saying, my chesed is like ashes, my chesed relative to the chesed of Hashem himself is like ashes relative to the original tree that they came from. The substance is there, but it's not, you know, it's a completely different kind of thing. So therefore, in other words, saying, like, even though I personify chesed, and I'm bestowing chesed upon the whole of everybody who comes to my tent, it's like nothing compared to Hashem.
Which is true, in a way.
Well, yeah, that's the point. So Avraham didn't pride himself on it. L'Moshe V'Aaron, Hashem continues, I gave greatness to Moshe V'Aaron, Omar, or Omru, really, and what did they say? V'nachnuma. They say when the Jewish people are asking for food and whatever, they say, and what are we? Also an expression of humility. V'nachnu, and we, like anachnu. Also, the David, Omar v'Anochi Selas v'Loish, and I gave greatness and covered to David, and he says, until him, v'Anochi Selas v'Loish, I'm a worm and not a person.
Right.
One explanation, by the way, why we're mentioning Gapka these four.
So
actually, Marsha says a vort on it. We know that David was originally destined to live for only 3 hours, but other magicians saw with Ruach HaKodesh that that's going to be the case. And he donated 70 years of his own life to David HaMelech, which is how David lived to 70, and Adam lived 70 years less than a millennium, less than 1,000 years, 930 he lived. So therefore, the idea is, David is saying, if it hadn't been for that, I would have been womb food as soon as I was born.
And that's why
that's what he's saying. Yeah.
What does he have to add?
Beloish means, okay, but it means, in other words, I'm not even on the level of what a person really should be. Whatever. The point is that all these four figures in Jewish history, we see that they have the ultimate greatness, each in their own way, and they're still expressing this tremendous humility in front of Hashem.
Did David say that after Bathsheba?
I don't know when he said it, but whatever it is, at some point in his life he said it. Avol over to Kechavim Einan Kein, but Hashem continues, Goyim are not like that. For example, Nasati Gdula the Nimrod, I gave greatness to Nimrod. He was the world power at that time. Omer, and what did he promptly say? Havon ibn alonu ir. Let's build ourselves a city and rebel against Hashem, the tower of Babel. Leparai, I gave greatness to Parai. He was the ruler of a superpower. Omer mi Hashem, and what did he say? When Moshe and Aaron come to him, who is Hashem that I should have to listen to him? L'Sancheirev. Sancheirev was also a world power in his time, Omer, and he says, Mi b'chol ole keharas, who was there among all the gods of any of the other nations that was able to withstand me? And he says to the Jewish people in Yerushalayim, L'Habdil, your Hashem is not going to be able to save you from me either. And L'Nebuchadnezzar, and I gave greatness to Nebuchadnezzar, Hashem continues, Omer, and he says, Yeshaya describes him as saying, El al-bom se'ov, I'll climb up on the highest cloud, and I'll be like Hashem. I'll be a god. And L'chira melech sir, Omer, and he says, Moshe v'lekim yashavti b'lev yamim. I sat like a god among in the middle of the seas. There's actually a medrash that describes, based on the sukkim over there, that Chiram built himself this beautiful palace with the different rooms and the different furnishings of it and whatever were meant to be like a semblance of how it is in Shemayim, and they're sitting in the middle of it and pretending that he's a god. So therefore, so we see that
knowing the character of these Rishayim, why did Hashem give them such
Bechira Chofshes, the person still has Bechira. Each of them had Bechira. They could have used their Chiram for a period of time, actually did use his greatness for good. He did, for example. We know he helped David build his palace, he helped Shlomo build the Beis Mikdash, but later on he went bad. The Medrash lists him as one of the people, according to one opinion, he's one of the people who went into Gan Eden alive, but then later on, because he went bad like this, then he was kicked out, and eventually he was defeated and killed by Nebuchadnezzar. Okay, so that's the point. In other words, that's the distinction, that's the loyme rubchem mikol ha'amim, because you don't act greater than all the other nations, but rather you, Jewish people, have it in your ruchnis, like a DNA, to be humble. Again, Rishoyim is not necessarily saying that I don't believe in Hashem or I'm greater than Hashem or any such thing. They did Averis, but they wouldn't have expressed themselves like this.
Still humble?
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, in certain, and not in all areas, maybe. Not in all areas were they humble necessarily, but at least they understood where they stand relative to Hashem. They're not thinking, like in Nebuchadnezzar or Pare or whatever, that I don't know who Hashem is and I don't have to listen to him. Okay. Amar Rav Avitamer of Yechanan, in this connection, Godol Shenema B'Moshe V'Aaron Yosef Mashenema B'Avram. What it says about Moshe and Aaron, the level of humility that they reached, is even greater than what it says about Avram. De'ilu B'Avram K'chiv V'Anoichi Opavei. For by Avram, as we quoted, he says, I'm dust and ashes. Now, dust and ashes is not very much, but it's something. It's a substance. De'ilu B'Moshe V'Aaron K'chiv V'Nachnu Ma. But what do Moshe and Aaron say about themselves? What are we? What are we? In other words, an even higher level of this old tale, of course.
Meaning we're nothing.
Yeah. V'omar Rava v'temer Rav Yechanan, and also Rava, or some say Rav Yechanan, said, En ha'olam miskayim el b'shul Moshe v'Aaron. The whole world only exists because of Moshe and Aaron. More so Moshe and Aaron, because they reached the ultimate level of Bittul. Ksiv hacha v'nachnu ma, because here we see that they're describing themselves, they're saying, what are we? Uchtiv hacham toila eretz al blima. We have a pasuk in Iyev that Hashem hangs, that Hashem suspends the earth al blima. Blima is short, blima is a word combined of blima. Blima means nothing. Without anything. So when they're saying v'nachnu ma, what are we? Then it means that the whole world stands on their course. Omer Abila, and basically, I mean, because that's what it is. You know, pichsidus. The idea is that the whole world is elikos. We just don't perceive it. So the greater a person's bittul to elikos, the more they're evoking the elikos that brings the world into existence in the first place and keeps on recreating it. So that's what we're saying. Even Avraham, with his avonoichi alpha v'efer, is still saying, okay, the world has a metzius. So I have a metzius. I'm alpha v'efer, but I have a metzius. Whereas Moshe and Aaron are the first ones to articulate this idea that they themselves have no independent metzius.
One second. Moshe and Aaron, they saw the level of Yitzchak, Avraham didn't.
So that's part of it.
So
indeed, that's part of it.
They had maybe in a way less force than
that's fine. We're not necessarily saying, we're not necessarily measuring one tzaddik against another. Avraham has his role in Jewish history. He's one of the others. Moshe and Aaron are not. Moshe and Aaron, on the other hand, relate to Chochma. Moshe, in particular, relates to Chochma, to Chochma of Atzilus, which the others don't. So yeah, but we're saying in terms of Bittul, tell of course that Moshe and Aaron's Bittul was higher than Avraham. Amar Rav Ila, so Rav Ila also says in this connection, speaking of that process, Torah Eretz Ablima, Ein Ha'olam Meskayim Ela B'Shvil Misha Boilam Es Atme B'Shach Meriva. The world only continues to exist because of some, for the sake of somebody who Boilam, who closes his mouth, Boilam Es Atme, closes his mouth, he holds himself back, B'Shach Meriva at a time during an argument. In other words, you often, Rashi explains, Boilam is related to a word that means just keep his mouth closed. So a person who, in the heat of an argument, is able to keep his mouth closed and not continue the argument and make it worse and insult the other person or whatever, is a tremendous chulis, and the world stands on the world continues to exist for the sake of such a person. Shenema Torah Eretz Ablima.
Somewhere else, I think. It has also greater yichud.
That's also. Shenema Torah Eretz Ablima. The same pasuk that Hashem suspends the earth on blima. Here we're explaining the word blima not as composed of the two words blima like we did before, but rather meloshin boilem, meloshin closing. A person who is boilem asafne, who closes and keeps himself closed up and doesn't retort in an argument with a personal insult or whatever is a very great thing. There's a famous verse, by the way, that, well, we say Benafshi Kofal HaKaltia, yeah. But there's actually, there's a famous verse that I've heard on it that you have. If you have such a person who, when they're insulted, they don't respond back in kind, they have a tremendous chus, and to get a bracha from such a person. Well, that, and also the bracha from such a person is tremendously effective. Rav Abahu says there's a different way of looking at it. Who does the world stand on whose schus? Misha mesim atme kmisha einai. The world stands on the schus of somebody who makes himself like he doesn't exist. Shenema umitachas zroyet oilam, because the pasuk says underneath is the arms of the world. So meaning mitachas, the person who acts like the person who feels himself underneath everybody else, who's humble, is zroyet oilam. He's the arms that support the world. What does it mean? A pasuk in Tehillim. Literally, the pasuk means: is it true, Elam, that you're mute? Tzedek daberun, you should be speaking justice. Meisharim kishpadu bnei adam, you should be judging people. You should be judging people fairly and favorably. In simple pshat, the pasuk is talking Avram. David is talking to his various enemies who spoke lashon hara about him, such as Doeg, another people like that. But the Gemara is doushening like this. The word ha'umnam is meloshin umnus, meloshin a craft, a skill.
Umanus,
right. So ma umnuse shel adam ba'olam hazeh, what is the craft, what is the skill that a person has to develop in this world? Yosim asme ke'ilim, is that he has to be able to make himself like mute, again, to not be able to answer back when people are insulting him or whatever. Yochol af ledivrei Torah, you would think then that once we say that, maybe that applies to divrei Torah as well. Once that maybe you shouldn't be speaking divrei Torah as well. Hold on, I'll explain something about this. Talmud Lomar tzedek tzedaberim. No, therefore the pasuk continues. You have to speak tzedek. You have to speak justice, which is Torah. Yochol yogis daiter. So then you would think, okay, in that case, then a person can be negis daiter. You can be proud of his accomplishments in Torah or whatever. No, Talmud Lomar meisharim tishpatu bnei adam. Therefore, the pasuk continues. You should judge other people like meisharim. And Rashi explains meisharim is meloshin mishar, a flat land which is easily trodden on, unlike mountains or whatever where it's very hard to climb them. Flat land. Flat land is very easy to walk on. So therefore, in other words, the person has to be like people who he'll allow people to step over him. He's not going to be proud. So what's going on over here, in particular, why would we think, once we're saying that a person has to be quiet, why would we think that she should be quiet as far as Divrei Torah, isn't Divrei Torah one of the most important things to do? So there is actually a vote from this, I think from Chofetz Chaim, who says, you see from this how bad talk is, that the Gemara has a Havam, you know, that maybe to stay away from it, you should even be quiet from Torah. There is, though, actually, there's a sticha from Tavshin Yud Tes, In Tavshin Yud Tes, the Rebbe's own perek was Nunches, which is the capital from which this pasuk comes, and the Rebbe explained it actually in connection with a sicha on Pirkei Avos. What it is like this: when we're saying Ma Umenusei Shal Adam Ba'Olam Hazeh, what's the craft, the skill that a person has to develop in this world, meaning that So this world, how does this world relate to Hashem? Hashem, so to speak, speaks, and the word Hashem speaks, and the world comes into existence. Baruch Oymer V'Oyseh. But then you have a higher level of existence, which is your neshama, your nefesh, nefesh Hashenis B'Yisrael, v'chelek elekami ma'al mamash. It comes, as Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya, so to speak, from Hashem's thoughts. So therefore, what's the umnus, what's the craft that a person has to develop in this world is yostim asmi ke'ilim, have the ability to relate to the higher level, not just to relate to Hashem in the way in which the rest of Gashmius does, to the level of Hashem's speech, but rather to be able to relate to the level of Hashem's thought, to make his nefesh alekis the more primary thing. So then you would think maybe also for Divrei Torah, you should be focusing on the thought part, namely Nister, Torah Sakabala, etc., rather than Nigla, which is more like the spoken part, the understood part. No, therefore we're saying Tzedek Tzedaber, and you have to learn Nigla as well. Once you have that, though, you would think maybe you can learn it without such a sense of bittul. If you're learning nigla anyway, which is practical day-to-day halachas and discussions and whatever, maybe you don't have to feel such a sense of bittul. No, nesharim tishkudu b'nei adam, you have to still have that sense of total bittul telikus.
Why would the gilui of Torah would...
Because you would think that nigla is maybe, since it's more practical, down-to-earth things that have to do with the world, rather than more than with the neshama and whatever, maybe therefore you could allow yourself to feel a little bit of a messias. But no, therefore the pasuk is telling us that not. Okay. Now back to halacha. Amr of Ze'era the Itamer of Rabba Bayumi, Rabba Ze'era says, or some say Rabba Bayumi, it says, Machasin ba'asar irani dachas. You're allowed to do kisi adam with the dust from an irani dachas. So you have, on the face of it, the Gemara assumes that means, you know, that you burnt an irani dachas, you would now be allowed to use the ashes from it to do kisi adam.
We glanced at this yesterday with the things that were of
no, we didn't really talk about it. We talked about it just before, at the beginning today. We talked about, for example, the expression nikras psilin, with nikras psilin, which we said, the Ritva says, it may mean maybe like the rotting away of Avodah Zarah or something. So now we're getting back to that. Now we're getting back to that topic. Okay. So the question is, what do you mean? You can use dirt, you can use dust, meaning ashes from an irani dachas. Why should he be allowed to? Isure hanahu. Isn't the ashes from an irani dachas also banah? Nothing of the banned substance should be in your hand. The answer is almost the eerie. You're right. We don't mean the actual ashes of the burnt city and its possessions. We mean the dust of the place where the irani dachas stood. Well, that's the point. Well, you could argue it is something that belonged to the irani dachas, but no. Why not? Because the pasuk says that you have to gather together all the spoils, all the contents of the irani dachas into its main square, the sarafta, and then you burn it, implying what do you have to burn from an irani dachas? Only things which all you have to do is gather them together. In other words, they're already detached from the ground, and then they can be burnt. As opposed to the dust over there and other things attached to the ground, which you would have to first rip them out of the ground, or dig them out of the ground, whatever, then gather them together, then burn them, those the pasuk is mamayit. So therefore, that means that all that's lacking in order to fulfill the mitzvah is just to gather it and burn it. Over here, you would need another thing because you'd first need to dig it out from the ground. You'd first need to detach it from the ground. So therefore, the dust doesn't have to be gathered. Therefore, the dust is not osabana, and therefore you can use the dust. Rava Amar. Rava says, I can give a different answer. No, we're actually talking about the ashes from the irani dachas. Ah, you're saying they're also b'hana. Doesn't matter. Mitzvahs lav lehonis nitnu. Mitzvahs are not given for hana. Mitzvahs, in other words, Rashi says, the mitzvahs are not for hana. Gzeiras melech hi aleihem. It's a gzeirah from Hashem. You have to do this mitzvah. Therefore, the hana, you may get a hana from it. You feel good, you did the mitzvah, you get a schar, melamayla, or whatever, but that's not considered a hana. The essential concept is called mitzvah lav lahonis nitnu, so you're allowed to do a mitzvah. So in certain cases, as we're going to see, you're allowed to do a mitzvah with something which otherwise would be also the hana. So therefore, over here, you can use the ashes from the irani dachas for kisi adam, because the hana you're getting from it is not considered a hana. You're doing it just because it's a gzeirach melech, because Hashem said to do it. In other places, Rashi uses
the need,
No, we're talking about the actual ashes themselves. You can take the actual ashes themselves of the burnt city and take them and put someplace else and use them for Kisi Adam. That's what we're saying. Mitzvah Slav Lahonis, and it's not considered having enough. In other places, it actually uses the expression that the mitzvahs are given ka'oil aleihem, that they're a yoke on the Jewish people, and you're required to do it. It's not a matter of enough. So, Yosef Ravina of Carmel Olahoshmai, just the Ravina later on was sitting and saying over this statement, this discussion, Esvei Rav Rechumi L'Ravina, Rav Rechumi asks Ravina, I have a contradiction. We learn in a Braisa, Shofar Shalavet Eskechavim Lo Yitkaboy, you're not allowed to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah with a shofar of Avodah Zarah.
No, I'm not.
That's the question. My Lavin Toka Lo Yosef. So then on the face of it, if you're saying you're not allowed to blow with it, would mean that if you blew with it, then you're not Yosef.
Right.
Means, in other words, that mitzvahs are lohonis mitzvahs. The answer is like, in Taka Yosef. No, maybe what the Braisa means is, like, you shouldn't be blowing with it, because miustik, Rashi says, is to use something of a zara. But if you did, then it's kosher, yeah.
But
the evidence is kosher, yeah. What about, similarly, when it says, lulav shal avodah kechavim lo yitil, again, you have a Braisa that says that you should not be using a lulav of a zara. So again, my lav im not al yotze. So wouldn't that mean the same thing? It would mean, and if you took it, you're not yotze. The answer is lav im not al yotze. No, it may still mean that if you used it again, it's a miyustika thing to use because it was used for avodah zarah. But nevertheless, for the avodah, it'll be kosher. So the question is, Valtanya, one second, Valtanya toka lo yotza not al yotza. What do you mean? So you're telling me it means that for the avodah it works, but we learn in another braisa that says very clearly, if you blew with such a shofar, you're not yotze, and if you took lulav with such a lulav, you're not yotze. So that means mitzvah lohanis mitzvah. Now, actually, the Gemara is going to point out in a second that there is a difference. The next thing in the Gemara is going to point out there is a difference between those things and kisi adam. But with that said, actually, Tosfos actually discusses, based by comparing this Gemara and other Gemaras, that the, among other things, there can be a difference. We know, we learn in Masechta Avodah Zarah, that Avodah Zarah that belongs to a Jew can never be bottled. Avodah Zarah that belongs to a Goy, you're able to be mevatelet. So therefore, when we have other Gemaras that imply that, when we have other Gemaras that imply, or all Gemara for that matter, is going to end up implying that you are able to use them because Mitzvah Slav L'Honis Nitnu, that's talking about when they belong to a Goy. As opposed to when we say that even if you used it, you're not Yotze, that would be when it belongs to a Yid, where not only you have the problem of Miyus, but you have the problem that can never be bottled. At least for the Goy, you can be mevatelet and then you can use it. And there's also some other distinctions. There's a distinction, is it that the shofar, for example, is it that it comes from an animal that was worshipped, or is it that the shofar itself was worshipped? There's a couple of distinctions there. Okay. Anyway, Omer Ravashi. So Ravashi says, you're trying to compare shofar and lulav on the one hand versus kisi adam on the other hand. Hochi hashta. What kind of a comparison is that? Awesome. You know why in those cases you could argue that you're not allowed to use that shofar, you're not allowed to use that lulav, even b'di'evad, because shi'ura b'inan, because in each of those cases you need a minimum size shi'ur, a shofar has to have a minimum length, a lulav has to have a minimum length. When it comes to avodah zarah, we have a general concept that says it's considered as though the size has already been cut down. It's supposed to be destroyed, it's supposed to be burnt, therefore it can be considered as if it was already burnt, and therefore it doesn't have the right shear. As opposed to hot, therefore you can't use it, even to the oven. Again, like Tosafot says, if we're talking about that it belonged to a Jew, for example. Hocha, but over here, you're talking about kisi adam. You're saying that it's considered as if it's already burned, as if it's already crushed up. No, and the more finely it's crushed, the better it is, because the adam, as we said before, that you have to use fine substances for that purpose. So therefore, you could argue that even if you could say that it is also b'hana, and even if you're going to argue that, again, hana, there's not an issue because mitzvah slav l'hanis. Even if you're going to argue it doesn't have a shear, doesn't matter. You don't need a shear. You just need it to be a fine substance, and that's what it is. It's a fine substance.
You said you need a kazayit, didn't you?
No, we never said you need a kazayit. No, we never said such a thing. Now, there is a point that some of the achronim point out. You do need enough blood. You do need enough dirt to cover the blood. However, they point out that's not a matter of a shear that you need a certain amount of dirt. What that amounts to is depending on the amount of blood. You need a certain amount of dirt, but it's not really that you have, unlike, for example, with shofar, where it has to be a certain size, and unlike with lulav, where it has to be a certain size, here it's not so much that in and of itself it has to be a certain size, it's just practically speaking, it needs to be able to give coverage. Right. Okay. Hadron alach kisi adam. This next perek, well, you can see from the first two words, is going to talk about the dinim of Gid HaNosha. In the middle of it, we're also going to digress and talk a little bit about the dinim of Chelev, because we mentioned there's a fat on the, around the Gid HaNosha, and therefore that leads into a bit of discussion about Chelev that's also in Mutter. So we know the basic idea of Gid HaNosha. We know the story of Yaakov fighting with the Malach. Later on, a little bit into the Perek on Daf Tzadik Aleph, we're going to have a long piece of Agadta analyzing that whole story in detail, and a number of other related stories in Chumash. But basically, we know once that happened, the pasuk says, "Alkein lo yochlu b'nei Yisrael as Gid HaNosha." The Jewish people are not allowed to eat the Gid HaNosha. You have later on in the Perek, we have a machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Is it that the Gid HaNosha became also to them right away, right after the story happened? Or is it it became also to them only after the Torah was given? Then Hashem dictated the Torah to Moshe, and he told them to stick in this pasuk about the Gid HaNosha right after the story relating to it. That the mitzvah itself was given for the first time at Matan Torah, like all the other mitzvahs.
So then finally, Yaakov may not have been forbidden to eat the Gid.
So in other words, yeah, according to that opinion, then Yaakov and his children wouldn't have been forbidden. Okay, what is the Gid HaNosha? The general understanding is it's the sciatic nerve. So that's the subject.
It's running along.
Yeah, it runs down the whole leg. Yeah. One of the things we're gonna deal with in the parak is what parts of it exactly are also. We're gonna talk about what parts of it. We're gonna talk about various other related nerves that are in that area. You actually have Adar Yom Hazeh. You have a slightly different minhagim based on a machlokes or shonim of which parts exactly are also in Mutter. The Temanim have a masoda of their own on the subject. I mean, pretty much everybody agrees the Gid HaNosha is the sciatic nerve, but again, you have various other nerves that are in the leg over there, and you have some of them that's actually the Temanim are allowed to eat, which other Jews are not. But yeah.
So it's not the Achilles.
That's not there, no. Before we were talking about that, when we talked about, I mentioned before the word gid has a general meaning in Gemara terminology. Gid means anything long and skinny in the body.
Right.
So it can include nerves, it can include veins, it can include blood vessels, it can include tendons. Sometimes it also includes the male organ.
Right.
But over here, so before when we learned about Somas Agid in the fourth parak, there it was tendons, the Achilles tendon and various other ones, so whatever. Somas Agid in there, the gid means, it's not the Gid HaNosha. The Gid HaNosha is a nerve, is the sciatic nerve. You actually have, in Rabbi Yonis and Ivashitz's times, there was a menaker who claimed, he did some research or whatever, and he claimed based on various sources that the Gid HaNosha is actually some other structure that you find only in male animals. I don't know whether he meant that it's actual male organ or whether he meant that it's some nerve that innervates, whatever it is anyway. So he claimed that, and you had different, among others, Rabbi Yonis and Ivashitz argued against him on the basis of, it's an interesting thing. In the Sefer Kresi Uplesi, which is a Sefer that Rabbi Yonis and Ivashitz wrote, a Pirush on the Torah. So he writes that you see not like him because he says the smag writes that the mitzvah applies to both males and females. So if it applies to female animals, it's obviously not something that you find only in male animals. Everybody right after that, everybody started jumping on Rabbi Yonason and saying, what are you talking about when smag says about a certain mitzvah that it applies to males and females? He means it applies to Jewish men and women, not that it applies to male and female animals. So what does Rabbi Yonason mean? Some you can find for in Pischa Chuvah, for example, he brings from Chuvahs where they say, okay, look, you know, even a great Talmud Chacham like Rabbi Yonason can make a mistake like that. But there was, for example, the Chassam Sofer later on wrote in his Chedushim about it and explains how even if what the Smag is saying does refer to male humans and to male and female humans, nevertheless we can deduce from that what Rabbi Yonason's point that it applies to male and female animals as well. And then on top of that, about 80 years ago or so, a Rav published an article where he said he had a manuscript, he had a copy of Kresi Uplesi with notes on it, with notes and corrections in Rabbi Yonason's own handwriting. And the word smag there was crossed out, and instead it said Samach Hei Nun, which stands for Sefer HaNikur. And if you look in Sefer HaNikur, which is a Sefer about the practicalities of taking out the Gid HaNosha and the various fats and whatever, it says clearly that it applies to both male and female animals. So it turns out Rabbi Yonason was right after all, but apparently the printers mistakenly, they read his Samach Hei Nun in his original manuscript and misread it as smag and printed it accordingly.
They said it applies just to male?
So, no. So this shochet, this shochet in Rabbi Yonason's time claimed that it applies only to males. But Rabbi Yonason was saying, you see in Samach Hei Nun, which stands for Sefer HaNikur, that in fact it doesn't. It applies to female animals as well. All right.
This also applies to like goats and sheep.
It applies to animal. It applies to four-legged animals. We're going to see in the Mishnah it doesn't apply to birds. So yeah. Okay. So the Mishnah says, Gid Anoshe Noeg Ba'oretz V'Chutzlaretz. The dinim that the Gid Anoshe is author. Mind you, when we say author, we mean it's also ba'achila. You have a Gemara in Sochim where Reb Shimon holds. Reb Shimon actually in a Gemara in Sochim holds it's actually also ba'hana as well. But the halacha is not like that. The halacha is mutabahana. Okay. Given Nasha Noeg Ba'oretz V'Chutzlaretz, it applies in Eretz Yisrael and outside Eretz Yisrael. B'fnei Abayis V'Shalai B'fnei Abayis, whether the Beit Mikdash is standing or not. B'cholin of a Mokdashin, it applies to cholin animals and kodshin animals. Now, we've had this kind of list so far in the fourth, and we've had it so far in the fifth and sixth perek. We had it in connection with Oysa V'Esbenoi, and we had it in connection with Kisi Adam, and we're going to have it later on in the Masechta in connection with various other ones, with various other mitzvahs. Each one, the idea is there's one thing in the list which is a chiddush, and once we have that one, then we include the rest of the list as well. So the Gemara is going to explain that the chiddush is actually in the one that we're saying over here that it applies to kodshim. Well, we're going to discuss that at some length in the Gemara. The fact that it applies ba'aretz v'chutz la'aretz is not much of a chiddush, because in general, mitzvahs that are chovas aguf, mitzvahs that are incumbent on an individual person, are the same in and out of Eretz Yisrael. It's only mitzvahs that fluyas ba'aretz. It's only mitzvahs that apply to the land that apply only to Eretz Yisrael. Continues the mission. Noeg v'behemo v'chaya, it applies to domestic animals and wild animals. V'yerech shel yamin v'yerech shel shmoil, it applies to the right leg and to the left leg, which we'll see in the Gemara later that not everybody agrees to that, but that's what we're saying so far. V'einin noeg v'oif, it does not apply to birds, mipnei she'ein like casp, because birds do not have a casp. Now, what do we mean by a casp? So you have like this. Here's some pictures.
The
pasuk says kaf hayorech, asher kaf hayorech. So what it is like this. In animals, yorech is the thigh. And yorech is the thigh.
The thigh.
So you have, in animals, you have a muscle, a muscle of the thigh, which is round. It's shaped like a spoon, therefore. It's round. The word kaf literally means a spoon. And that is where the Gid Anoshe is. It's in that muscle, and then spreads out throughout all the muscles over there.
If you want to get technical, it's the
quadriceps femoris muscle. It's a muscle that covers the femur, the top bone of the leg.
It's an anterior muscle.
Okay.
A posterior muscle.
Oh, okay, whatever.
So you're saying the posterior one.
So this is the one. This is the one. Yeah. If it's round, then
the sciatic is posterior, not anterior.
Okay, sciatic runs right through it and near it and whatever. We'll discuss in the Gemara. But as opposed to birds, you buy a chicken in the store and you look at its thigh, it's broad and flat. It's not rounded. The rounded part of the leg is further down. It's a different part of the leg. That's not the yerech anymore. That's not the thigh.
Right.
So therefore, it doesn't apply to a bird. Mepnesha ain't like calf, because a bird does not have a rounded muscle over there. V'noyeg b'shlil, also the din of Gid Anoshe applies to a shlil, which is, Rashi says, a fully developed baby that was found in the womb, which we learned previously in the fourth parak, that we had a machlokas, Reb Meir and the Chachamim, whether the shchita of the mother makes it mutter to eat or whether it needs its own shchita, but we're saying that the din of Gid Anoshe does apply to it.
So you can't eat it,
you have to take out the Gid Anoshe. The chelb, You have other mepharshim will explain that shlil over here means maybe a baby that's not fully formed yet, that even then it's also okay. Rabbi Yehuda omer ein noeg b'shlil, the chelb in mutter. Rabbi Yehuda says that no, the din of Gid Anoshe does not apply to an unborn baby, and that the chelb of it is also mutter. The ena tabachin then monen al Gid Anoshe divir de meir. Now, when it comes to you buy meat from a shochet, you cannot trust him to say that he took out the Gid Anoshe, so says Reb Meir, because the Gid Anoshe has a lot of branches and whatnot throughout the leg. It's a big tircha to remove it, which is in fact why nowadays in America and a number of other countries, they don't even bother. They just sell the whole hindquarters to goyim. So therefore, so Reb Meir says you can't trust a sheikh to say that he took it out. No, you can trust him regarding that and regarding chaylev. If he says that he took out the Gid Anoshe and he says he took out the chaylev, then you can trust him. What happens if you find that he's lying? That we'll deal with in the Gemara.
To begin with, you can trust him.
But to begin with, you can trust him. Okay. So the Gemara starts out, Mukdoshin Pshita, isn't it obvious that the din of Gidanosha, that the issue of Gidanosha applies to animals of Kodshim? Why would we think just because they became, just because they were designated as Kodshim, that issue should go away? What do you think? Because you were Makdish the animal, therefore the issue of Gidanosha goes away from it. V'chitema, now you might answer like this. We're going to have a general topic that's going to come up again and again throughout this parak, called, the question is, do Gidim have a tam or not? You have one opinion that says, yes, be Gidim menosin tam, that Gidim do have a taste that they can impart to other food. And then you have an opinion that says, ain't be Gidim menosin tam, that they do not. Now, you have Rishonim, such as the Ritva, who point out, I mean, this is a machloek that's in Metzius. Give it, for example, to a goyish chef, let him taste it and tell you whether it has a taste or not. The answer is, they say, it has a taste. Everybody agrees it has a taste. The question is whether that taste is enough to be significant in halacha. So in other words, it's not a matter of actual definition, it's a matter of halacha definition. Does halacha consider that it has enough taste that it can impart to something else? So you could
have much of a taste.
Okay, so that's the point. So it has a little bit of a taste, but not necessarily enough. So you have one way of looking at it that you could argue, yesh begidin benoisin tam. You could argue that the gid is able to impart a flavor to the meat that it's cooked with or whatever. Therefore, you could argue v'asi isu mukdoshin v'chayela isu gid. So therefore, you could argue like this, that what the Mishnah wants to tell us is that if a person were to eat gid anosha of an animal that was supposed to be a korban, then he would get two malchus. Number one, for eating the gid anosha, because whether it has a tam or not, the Torah asks it. And number two, because he ate meat from kodshim that he's not allowed to.
So the meat that's
let's say, for example, the gid anosha was cooked, let's say, in the meat over there. So yeah, if you were to eat the actual gid, then you could argue you have double malchus. Maybe that's what it means. The problem with that is hay mukdosh and no you begin me by lay. In that case, it should say the other way around. It should say the gid, which is already osur, the isur of kodshim also applies to that gid anosha. If that's what it means, if we're saying the gid anosha is considered actual meat, such that when a person eats it from kodshim, in other words, like this, for example, when it comes to kodshim, if let's say, for example, a person were to eat a bone from kodshim, let's say somehow a person managed to eat a bone from it, he wouldn't be chayv malchus for eating meat of kodshim when he's not supposed to, because not meat. If you argue that ain begid menoisin tam, then they would have the same rule. You wouldn't be chayv on them for kodshim. The only thing you'd be chayv for is because it's gid anosha. If you argue yesh begid menoisin tam, then he can be chayv double malchus. Fine, but the point still remains. It was also as gid anosha from the beginning, before the animal was designated as a korban. Now you're designated as a korban, you're going to say you have a second iser. But in that case, the Mishnah is saying it backwards. Instead of saying that gid anosha applies to mukdoshin, it should have said mukdoshin applies to gid anosha. That being also already as gid anosha, now you have a second iser once the animal is designated as a korban. Yeah. Now, Ela kasava ain begin menos in tam. No. Evidently what it means is like this. The Tana of our Mishnah actually holds ain begin menos in tam. Gidin do not have a flavor that they can impart to anything else. Which, like I said, this is going to come up again and again in our parish. It's relevant to the question, for example, if let's say you cooked meat with the gid anosha inside it, do you have to worry about the flavor that's what we have to discuss. If you say ain begin menos in tam, then maybe not. Yeah. Okay. So the Tana of our Mishnah then, we're going to say, holds in the Gid Menoisin Tam, of Mukdoshin Isu Gid Ike Isu Mukdoshin Leka. Therefore, all the Mishnah is trying to tell us is that you should know when the animal is kodshim, then also the Gid is still also. In other words, we started out asking, why should we have to do that? Why should we have to say that? There's no Chiddush in it. The Chiddush is not that the issue of Gid Anosha still applies. Of course it applies. Having applied before the animal was a korban, there's no reason it should go away afterwards. What the Tana wants to inform us is that I'm saying that you only chayav one malchus for it even after the animal was mukdoshin, unlike you might have thought if you argued yesh begin menos in tam that you would get two malchus for it.
So by saying,
so that's what the Mishnah wants to stress by saying the word uvmuk, that it applies equally to cholin and mukdoshin. Just like by cholin you'd only get one malchus for it, so also by mukdoshin you get only one malchus for it, which implies ain begidin benoisin tam.
But why would you think if there's no tam for cholin, Why should there be a constant?
That's the point. That's the point. If you did, if you said in the point is, if you said yesh begin benayis and tam, you would say by cholim there would be one malchus because there's only the issue of gidan osha. By mukdashin there would be two,
right.
One for gidan osha and one for mukdashin. Because the Mishnah is telling us it's the same with cholim and mukdashin, that the Tana wants to inform us. You should know I hold and begin benayis and tam.
That's what it should say. Mukdashin.
That's why it says b'mukdashin. So the question is, the Sabar Tana di Dana ain't begidin benayis and tam. Are you telling me the Tana of our Mishnah holds that gidin do not have a tam? But it's not. But we learn later on in our perek, and as is often the case, the Gemara assumes that all the Mishnayot in a certain perek on a given subject come from the same Tana. And the Mishnah says later on in our perek, Yerashinis bashal b'gidan nosha. If you have a thigh of an animal that the gidan nosha was cooked still inside the thigh, im yesh b'benayis and tam harezu asura. If there's enough, if there's less than 60 times as much as the gidan nosha, so therefore the gidan nosha gave a flavor into the meat and it can't be bottled, then the thigh will be also. So we see the Tana of our perek and therefore our Mishnah clearly holds that gidim have a tam.
Therefore, our Mishnah not necessarily.
No, but that's what the Gemara is assuming, that if the later Mishnah is like it holds yesh begin benayis and tam, then it must mean our Mishnah does as well. So no, that can't be the explanation of our Mishnah. So it can't be, in other words, that our Mishnah is trying to imply that ain't begin benayis and tam, because in fact the Tana of our Mishnah holds yesh begin benayis and tam. So we're back to the question, why does the Mishnah have to mention that gidan nosha applies to mukdashin? So the answer is Elohocha bevlodis kodshimaskinen. No, so therefore what we have to explain is like this. Our Mishnah is talking about a baby that was born to an animal of kodshim. In other words, let's say you have a female animal that you designated as shlomim. Later on it gave birth. So now the point is that if you say, as Rabbi Yehuda said in our Mishnah, that gidan nosha does not apply to the unborn baby. So therefore, you could say, therefore, so what would happen when the mother gives birth? Now, you could argue like this. There's also two ways of looking at it. When you have an animal of kodshim that's pregnant, do we say that, or let's say, because we're talking about it became pregnant. So you designated it as kodshim, later on it became pregnant. Do we say as soon as the baby starts forming in the womb, it already has kedusha? Or do we say it only has kedusha once it's born? If we say that it has kedusha as soon as it's formed, and if we also hold like the Tana of our Mishnah, not like Rabbi Yehuda, that gidan nosha applies to an unborn baby, then therefore what it would mean is that you have two isurim coming at the same time. You have gidan nosha, as soon as the gidan nosha starts forming in this baby, it's already osur. And you also have the issue of kodshim. So, bevlodis kodshim askin. And so again, we're talking about that. We're talking about the baby of a kodshim animal. For kasava noyeg b'shlil. So now the Tana of our Mishnah holds, unlike Rabbi Yehuda, that gidat nosha does apply to an unborn baby. Because so therefore, as soon as the baby starts forming in the womb, once the gidat nosha starts forming over there, then you already have it's already osur. And because some of Lodis Kodshim may imonim kodeshim, he also holds that babies of Kodshim become Kodesh while they're still in the womb. Therefore, Jitsu Gid, Jitsu Mukdashim, Bahadi Hadodi Kodshim. Therefore, the Tana wants to inform us, you should know, there are actually two Isurim, but what it is both of those Isurim come at the same time. In other words, if it weren't for that, if you had one and later on you had another one, not necessarily we're going to have a topic later on in the parak, ein isur chal al isur, that you have different opinions whether one isur is able to be chal on another. Our Mishnah wants to inform us if they start at different times. But here, where they start at the same, the Mishnah wants to tell us, therefore, that he holds in such a way that it comes out they both start at the same time. The issue of Gid, the issue of Mokdashim, Ba'adi Adadi Kasi. So the issue of Gid and Nasha and the issue of it being Kodshim come at the same time. Okay, the question is, how could you say that the first part of the Mishnah, when it mentions Mukdashin, it's talking about an unborn baby? Later on in the Mishnah, it says that Gidan Nosha applies to a Shlil, implying that earlier in the Mishnah, we're not yet talking about an unborn baby. Because why would it all of a sudden say, Noyeg B'Shlil, if Mukdashin itself is already referring to a Shlil, then there's no reason to repeat that.
It repeats it in a sefer.
It continues a few lines down. You have a mukdashin said in the Mishnah. Then a few lines down, the noig b'shlil, Rabbi Yehuda Amein and noig b'shlil. The answer is no. Hoki Karma. No, what it is the Mishnah is talking throughout about a shlil, but what the Mishnah means to say is you should know, as far as a shlil, and therefore as far as the relevance of it to Kodshim, Dover Zem Achloik Asir Behoda Verabon. You should know this point of whether it applies to Kodshim. So yes, the first part of the Mishnah is telling us it applies to a shlil. Because otherwise, the Isser of Gidan Noshe is not going to be able to be Chal on top of the Isser of Mukdashim, because you have a very early stage of the baby's formation when there's no Gidan Noshe yet, and it's already also as Mukdashim. If we say it's also already once it that once it's one as it's forming in the womb. So therefore, so the Mishnah tells us like this. First, it tells us it applies to Kodshim, but then the Mishnah goes on to say, you should know, this that I told you, it applies to Kodshim by a shlil, is not according to anybody. You should know this is actually the subject of a machloikas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, whether it applies to a shlil. So first, the Mishnah says in a generic thing, that it applies to a shlil, implicitly by mentioning Mokdashin. Then it goes on to say, you should know that actually Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim argue about that.
What's the Lashon in the
paper? The Noyeg B'Shlil. The Noyeg B'Shlil, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, and a Noyeg B'Shlil. Yep. First the Mishnah mentioned Mukdashin, which implicitly means Shlil.
Right.
Then it goes on to say, you should know, when I told you that it applies to Mukdashin, meaning a Shlil, you should know, it's not so simple. I say the Noyeg B'Shlil, but you should know, Rabbi Yehuda says that not. So that's what it means. It's not repetitious. The question is, how could you think that the two Isurim of Gidan Noshe and of Mukdashin come at the same time? Mm-hmm. We learn in a Mishnah, later on, we learn in a Mishnah in Nazir, there are the following cases of Tumas Mes for which a Nazir has to shave and restart his Nazirus, meaning, in other words, first of all, nothing happens, for example, if he becomes Tomei of a Sheret, let's say, but also, or a Nevela of an animal, but also actually, even within Tumas Mes, there are kinds which make him Tomei, but he doesn't have to restart his Nazirus. And then there are kinds that within Tumas Mes, where he actually has to restart his Nazirus.
So which level is Tumas?
So that's the thing, they have different levels. And you have... No, it's not Rishon. All of them are talking about things that came from a mess. But you have certain things that came from a mess, which make him that he has to actually shave and restart his Nezirus, and other ones where he's just where Halacha L'Moshe was, he just has to go through the regular Parah Duma process and then continue his Nezirus.
So he becomes an Aviyat Tumah, basically.
So during that week,
when he becomes an Aviyat Tumah, certain things, he has to repeat certain things he does.
Again, when he becomes Tomei Mess, depending what the source of the Truma was, sometimes he will have to actually shave, bring his three karbanos, and restart his Nezirus. Other times not. Depends what kind of substance from a mess he was in contact with. But in Masechta Nazir, the Gemara lists all of them. The Rambam lists them all out. You have 12 things that Nazir Megaleach Aleihen, and then you have a number of things where even though he's Tomei, for example, one example that Rambam gives is, let's say he touched a single bone from a dead person. It's the other way around. The first couple of examples are actually things that are banan, where he became Tomei by Eretz Ha'akum or Sodosh and Nechash Kever, whatever. But you have some examples, for example, also where he was in an oihel where there is a quarter of a calf of bones, but those bones don't make up the majority of the number of bones in a person or the majority of the frame of a person. So he's tummy mess. He does have to be sprinkled with part aduma water, etc., but he doesn't lose his previous nezirus. He doesn't have to bring his karbanos and start over. Okay. So the point is, the Mishnah starts off, Al-Elu Tumas Anozim Agaleach, the following Tumas Anozim actually has to shave and restart his Nezirus for. The first ones are Al-Ames V'Akazayis Menames, for a mess or for Kazayis for a mess. V'Kashalon, now we have the obvious question, why does it have to mention both? Al-Kazayis Menames Megaleach, Al-Kulu Le'Kosh again. If you have to start over your Nezirus for having touched a Kazayis of a mess, why does it have to mention a mess as a whole? The Omer of Yechanan and Rav Yechanan explained, Lo Nitzricha Elul Nefosh La Nikshuru Ivara Begidim. The Chiddush of the Mishnah is, even you have a stillborn baby, where you have the whole baby is intact, but its limbs are not yet connected together with Gidin, So you don't yet have a Kazai. So you don't yet have a you don't have a Kazaius buster yet. So that's the point. Even though he doesn't, even though the whole baby is a tiny little baby yet, it was miscarried at a very early stage, and the whole thing is not yet a Kazaius, and there's no Gidim in it yet. Nevertheless, it is a mess, and therefore it is considered a whole mess, and therefore the Nazir would have to be Megaleach on it. The point being, in other words, that we see that you have a very early stage where you don't have Gidim yet. Alma isu mukdash in kadim. So therefore you see that when it comes to the baby being formed in the mother animal's womb, now let's go back to animals and gidan asha, then you have, as soon as it starts getting formed, it already has kedusha, and that comes before the isu of gidan asha, because the gidan asha doesn't exist yet. The same way as we're saying over here that you can have a baby that lo niskashu evar of the gidin, the same way over there. You can have an animal baby that the baby starts forming. The baby starts forming, but you don't have a gidan asha there yet. And the point is, afa gabdi, it comes before. So isa mukdashin comes first. How can the isu gid be hal on it? And the answer is it can. Afa gabdi isu mukdashin kadim. Yes, we can answer that even though the isu of kadshim comes first, because as soon as the baby starts forming, it's already osir. Osi isu gid chayil alayhu. You can still argue that the isu of gidan asha is able to be hal on top of that. And the reason for that would be shekein isurei noyeg b'bnei noyach, because, as I mentioned before, you have a machlokes later on in the perek, towards the end of the perek, whether the issue of gidan asha existed while the Jewish people still have the status of bnei noyach, meaning in Yaakov's time. If we say that yes, then it means that therefore, so now, well, what do you mean same thing for the animal? The point is, therefore, Isser Gid is a stronger Isser, because Isser Mukdashin only applies to Jews. Isser Gid and Nosha applied even when we were still considered B'nai Noyach. Therefore, it can be Isser Chalal Isser. So the question then becomes, Man Shamat Lehi Svara. Okay, but who is it that says that Svara, that it applied while the Jewish people are still B'nai Noyach? Rabbi Yehuda. But we see that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda, Tikatani, because our Mishnah had said that it applies to domestic animals and wild animals, and the Yerach Shal Yamin of Yerach Shal Smoil, and that the Mishnah continues, it applies both to the right leg and the left leg, and Rabbi Yehuda says it only applies to the right leg. So therefore, so the Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda. The answer is okay, high panis. So therefore, that's the question. How can you say that our Mishnah, that's saying that the Gidan Nosha is a stronger issue because it applied to Bnei Noach, that it's according to Rabbi Yehuda, if our Mishnah clearly disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda? The answer is okay, high panis. You can say the Tana of our Mishnah agrees with Rabbi Yehuda that it existed before Matan Torah, but he disagrees and says that it applies, and he disagrees on the other point and says it applies to both legs. Well, you know what? If we have another minute, let's finish up the. Yeah. Okay, so the question is fine. Okay, so the question is, Amar Shamat Leil Rabbi Yehuda B'Kneya. Fine, but you know what? Even Rabbi Yehuda's Svara that says that Gid Anosha applies to Bnei Noach. You know what? What he uses that to say is that therefore the issue of Gid Anosha will also apply to a Behemah Kneya. It'll also apply to a non-kosher species. Why? Because, in other words, he'll argue, before Matan Torah, the Jewish people were allowed to eat non-kosher species. There was no mitzvah yet not to, but they were already also in Gidan Asha. Therefore, you see that the issue can apply also to non-kosher animals.
And that's why...
So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that therefore Gidan Asha is a stronger issue. The issue kares mi shamat lei. Where do you see that Rabbi Yehuda would hold that the strength of Gidan Asha is so strong that it can even be chal on top of the Isur Kodshim, which could be an Isur Kares? For example, if a person eats Kodshim when they're Tomei or when they're Pigul or what have you, then they're Chayiv Kares. Where do you see that? Have you heard a hold that Gidan Asha is so strong to be able to go on top of such an Isur? So that can't be the answer. Ela Hocha B'Makeres Askinan? So no, the answer... Right. So no, we have to say, rather, we're not talking about an animal of Kodshim that became pregnant and had a baby. Rather, Elohochab Makerasaskinan, we must be talking about over here about the mother herself is not Kodesh. The mother herself is a holden animal, but she's pregnant with and eventually giving birth to a firstborn animal. Now, the firstborn, once it's born, it's going to have Kedusha. The Berechem Kodesh, now it only becomes Kodesh when it's actually born, when it comes out of the womb. So therefore, that's the point. When the Mishnah says that it applies to Mukdashim, what it means is that it's true. It doesn't apply to most Mukdashim because usually you'll have the Issu of Kodshim comes first. But I can give you an example of Mukdashim where the Issu of Gidan Nasha applies, namely Bechor. Because either way, if you say it applies to an unborn baby, then it means that Gidan Nasha was also even before it was born. Bechor, it only became a Bechor once it was born. If you say that it doesn't apply to an unborn animal, then fine, both Yisurim happen at the same time. The Yisur of Gidan Nasha and the Yisur of Bechor both come as soon as it's born. So that could be what the Mishnah means. Okay, if you say, you have two opinions in our Mishnah whether it applies to an unborn baby. If you say it does, then the Gidan Nasha was also already while it was in the womb of its mother. The Yisur of Bechor only applies once it's born, so Gidan Nasha came first. So even though the Issur Kodshim is an Issur Kares, but that's a stronger one, it can be Chal on top of Gidan Asha. Or if you say that Gidan Asha only applies once the baby is born, like Rabbi Hoda says, then fine, the Issur of Bechor and the Issur of Gidan Asha come at the same time. And also you can have both. So that could be what the Mishnah is implying by the word Mukdashim. That here is how it can apply to Kodshim. The Iboisema, another answer, you could answer Vladis Kodshim Baba Yosin in Kodshim. You could answer that in general, not necessarily do babies of other Kodshim animals become Kodesh in the womb. Maybe they only become, you could say that our Tana holds they become Kodesh like a Bechor only when they're born. So then also you have, again, same idea as with the Bechor. Either the Issue of Gidan Nosha came first, or the Issue of Gidan Nosha and the Issue of Kodshim come at the same time. Either way, that the Mishnah could be implying that by mentioning that it applies to Mukdashim. So we do say that our Tana holds Yesh Bidin Benois in time. But we don't have to say necessarily that the Tanakama holds that it applies to an unborn animal. It might not. There's two ways of understanding his word Mukdashin. It might apply only when the animal is born. When it gets Kedusha, then it gets the Issu of Gidan Nasha at the same time.
From the Bechor,
or even regular Kodshim, if you say that regular Kodshim also only, that regular babies of Kodshim, you could also argue, also only become Kodesh when they're born, which is a machlokes within a number of places in Chas. So that can be what the Mishnah means by Mukdashim. Okay. Or rather, not what the Mishnah means by Mukdashim. Obviously, the Mishnah also means, the fact is, Gidan Nasha does apply to regular Kodshim as well. But there's no Chiddush in that. Obviously, if you had a regular animal that you designated as Kodshim, there's no Chiddush in it. The Chiddush of the word Mukdashim is about babies that are just being born now, and the Chiddush is either of these ways of explaining it. That the Issur of Gidan Nasha came first, or that the Issur of Gidan Nasha and the Issur of Kodshim come together.